Hello, you are now listening to The Mothership with me, Josie Booth, on Radio Reverb. On this show, we are discussing the first 6 weeks after having a baby. We'll be chatting to our local ladies. They will be telling us all about their birth, their recovery, and what they learnt in the first 6 weeks after having a child. We also are chatting to our resident doctor, Dr. Tristan. He will be quashing our myths. And we are chatting to NHS psychologist Adele. She will be discussing perinatal mental health. Enjoy. I'm here on the streets of Brighton speaking to new mothers and getting their top tip, what they wish they had known before they gave birth to their child. What's your name?
Laura.
Give me your top tip.
You can actually get donated breast milk if you're having trouble with your milk before your supply comes in. And yeah, so I got a donation. It's called Human Milk for Babies. There's a Facebook group.
Okay.
And they link you up with people with children like of similar age. So it's like the milk's the same, like, I guess, process or...
Okay. Yeah. Is that something that you were given in the hospital then? Or?
No, I did lots of research because I was having to supplement with formula and I felt so guilty about giving formula because there's so much negative... things, so many negative things about it, but it's actually okay. Like, yeah. If you can't get enough milk, it's okay. And I just fought it for about 9 months before I finally gave in and was just like, okay, this isn't working for me.
Yeah.
Do what's right for your baby.
It's ridiculous, this taboo around not being able to top up with formula. I've done that myself and it was an absolute game changer for me. It like made my baby sleep for a little bit longer. He seemed totally satisfied the minute he had a bit. It was amazing. So one of your maybe regrets was to not beat yourself up so much.
Yeah, definitely, because then I was able to sleep more too because he was content and slept better.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks for that, Laura.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb. Come in.
It's that time again. We have our lovely Dr. Tristan in the house for our usual Q&A session and Myth of the Month. Hello, Doctor.
Hello, good morning, Josie. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Thank you so much for coming and imparting your skills, as always. So this month we're talking about the first 6 weeks after having a baby and how to survive. And I know you've got a lot of tips for us on this. Kicking off firstly with the baby. It's a very daunting experience when you're just kind of handed this little munchkin. What are the key things to look out for to know that your baby's healthy in those first few weeks?
Yes, I agree. It's very difficult to know what to do, particularly if you're a first-time parent and everything is extremely daunting and you're not really sure if you're doing anything right or wrong or, you know, how to tell if your baby's healthy. So it is very difficult, but hopefully we can try and talk you through for some of the basics. And I guess the biggest problem is how do you tell what's wrong with your baby, seeing as they can't speak to you or they just sit there screaming?
Yeah.
So there's a few things you can do to work out what's going on. I mean, I would say the most important thing with a baby in those first 6 weeks is feeding.
Yeah.
That's probably the hardest, but also the most important thing to get right.
It's such a key area. In fact, after this month's show, we will be doing a specific show all dedicated to feeding your child because there's just so much conflicting information and, you know, there's so much info on the internet about breastfeeding versus formula and different techniques. So in terms of feeding specifically, just kind of try to feed baby as much as possible?
Or? Well, I think, yeah, you have to find what works,
yeah.
You know, and if that's going to be breast or formula or both, then do what works for your baby, but also what works for you as well.
Yeah.
And I guess you need to know how much to give your baby. I think in the early stage, just feed them every time they're hungry. And if you're worried about how much is going in with breastfeeding, then the way to tell is just to look at how much they're peeing and pooing, basically.
Yeah.
Breastfed babies should poo every time they're fed.
Right.
And they should be doing lots and lots of wet nappies. So if that's happening, then you know they're getting enough milk in.
Yeah, I mean, that was quite a big fear of mine, was that I just didn't know if he was getting enough because, you know, there would be periods of like lots of crying and I just thought, okay, he obviously is still hungry, so how do I give him more? And there's lots of stuff on the internet and in books about, you know, oh, just keep feeding. The more you feed, the bigger your supply will be. But during that time, all you want is your baby to be satisfied in that moment and having and be full, And if you don't have enough milk in that moment, then you panic and you think, right, well, what can I do?
I guess some babies just difficult to satisfy.
Yeah.
The health visitor can help. So when they come to weigh your baby, you can see that your baby's putting on weight. And that's the most important thing. In the first week, they might lose a bit of weight, so up to 10%.
Right.
And that's just as the milk supply builds up and, you know, they've used a lot of energy to come into this world. So the best way to sort of monitor is you know, what goes in, what comes out, and how much they weigh.
Okay, fab. So, what other areas with the baby would you kind of say to look out for, anything?
So I guess probably a big one for parents is the whole crying situation. So obviously there's a huge variation in babies crying, how much they cry. Mm. There's also a huge variation in what parents tolerate as crying. Obviously some people very sensitive, so some people doesn't seem to bother them that much. So it's
and
quite
you don't really know because it's, you know, what is like a benchmark to you of like hysterical tears is to another person it's not that much. And when you're discussing with your peers about inconsolable crying, it's hard to know, is my baby actually inconsolable crying or is it actually the same level as my peers?
It's very subjective. Crying can be normal and it can be abnormal, so I think there are a few things to watch out for. So when babies cry when they're little, it usually means they want something. So cover all the usual bases, food, sleep, change them, cuddles, or, you know, if they're overstimulated. Once you've done all that and they're still screaming away, sometimes that's normal as well. But there are a few things that might mean there's something wrong. Excessive crying exists probably up into about 40 or 50% of babies, and that's sort of by the parents' perception.
Well, that's kind of good to know because I kind of felt like it was just me having a crying baby.
Yeah, every baby cries. I mean, most health professionals consider this normal. So usually when you've tried everything you can, it probably is a bit of underlying pain.
Yeah.
And that pain can, you know, range from things like colic to ear infections, and they can be other sort of underlying things as well.
So colic is quite a big one that you kind of hear mums everywhere chatting about.
So the things to look out for colic is if your baby is crying for more than 3 hours a day, more than 3 days a week, for more than 3 weeks, they get clenched fist, arched back, they sort of vomit and regurgitate their food sometimes. The good news is it's supposed to all get better by about 4 months' time.
Yeah, that sounds about right, actually, with my little one. I think it was around that time. But, you know, inconsolable crying is something that it really does kind of clench your little heart when you hear your baby screaming like that, not only because it is quite a painful sound, but, just hearing a child cry is never nice, is it?
I think any case, though, if you think your baby is crying too much, then it's always worth going to your GP and getting them checked over. Don't feel like you're wasting their time. It's always best to be safe than sorry with these things, and they can give them a full check over and see if they can find anything. It might be just something simple as an ear infection.
Right,
the baby can't tell you that their ear hurts, so and that's, you know, can be pretty painful, and that's easy to sort out. So,
fab. So enough about baby. What about poor mum over those first 6 weeks? It's quite a challenging time, isn't it?
Certainly is, yes. So I guess it's exciting and exhausting all at the same time. So I guess, you know, most importantly, you need some help. So whether that's your that's your partner or a loved one or, you know, anyone you can find, really, because it is going to be a real struggle trying to manage everything at the same time.
So lots of food cooked for you, cakes brought to you, massages applied to you, all the nice things.
Yeah, I mean, mums definitely need to eat well, you know, very healthy diet, and they need to eat more as well, because the breast milk is a huge amount of energy that is needed to make that. So. Mm. So you do have to eat more, which I'm sure they'll be pleased to hear about.
Yeah, bring it on. Pile on the pounds. What about when you're recovering, for example, having stitches even, is it?
I guess it depends on the delivery that you've had. It's if you've had a normal delivery, you may find you've got tears or grazes, or you've had some stitching doing. It's not unusual for that to happen. That usually heals up fairly quickly, usually with no complications at all. Sometimes you can start getting a bit of pain, and if you do that, then I would go and see your midwife or doctor, just get it checked and make sure it's healing properly. But if that has happened to you, they do keep a very close eye on you, so you don't need to worry too much about that. I guess with cesareans is a bit of a bigger picture. That is a major operation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, usually spend a couple of days in hospital, and when you come out, you do have a big scar. Again, that does heal fairly quickly, but you are going to be a bit limited for about 6 weeks. So things like driving and exercise, and don't carry anything heavier than your baby.
Yeah.
Also, sex, not to
stay away. I think that'll be the last thing on most ladies' minds when they've just had a baby. That nicely leads us into it's myth of the month. I was told you don't get pregnant while you're breastfeeding.
You can be fertile 3 weeks after you've given birth.
Oh, wow.
I have seen someone pregnant 11 days after giving birth.
No. 11 days. That is madness. How is that even possible?
I know.
I'm trying to work out the logistics of that in my mind. It's crazy, these people. You have just totally poo-pooed that.
Well, not completely. So I think this is the first myth we've done where there is a yes and a no answer to this. So
Right. It's
called the lactational amenorrhea method.
Ooh, that's a bit of a tongue twister.
It's a bit of a mouthful. And so if you breastfeed from birth, so if you exclusively breastfeed, don't use dummies, don't use formulas, anything like that, within the first 6 months, and you're feeding regularly throughout the night, then there's and you're not having periods, then there's a sort of, they think up to 98% actually, levels of contraception, which is comparable to a lot of, you know, the mainstream contraception. So,
yeah. Okay, so
it can be helpful, but you have to meet all those criteria. Right. So if you've had a period, or you're doing mixed feeding, or it's over 6 months, then you really can't rely on it at all.
Right, okay, thank you for that. So that, you know, that was a bit of a complex one. Sometimes some of the myths, you know, thank you to everyone who sends their myths in, but sometimes they are a bit obvious, you know, it's kind of...
Generally, as a rule, with the doctor's surgeries, they do prefer you to have an additional method of contraception, just because it's not 100%.
Okay. For any of you crazy cats out there that want to get back on the wagon 6 weeks after you've just had a baby, you know, you've heard it here first. Cool. So the second myth of this month's myth of the month, does having a baby reset your body from any fertility issues that you have experienced before? So that's quite a complex one.
Yes, I mean, I have had to look into this one a little bit. Okay. It was quite hard to find information about it, but I think from what I've seen is that it doesn't look like it has much of an influence. So lots of women report that they felt like it was easy to get pregnant the second time. Also, for people with something like polycystic ovaries, they feel like their symptoms are better after pregnancy. I've only been able to find sort of subjective accounts. I've not found any real research to support that's the case. So.
Okay. So we kind of, that's a bit of a loose-ended one. So we kind of like not, we can't guarantee that, but you haven't got any evidence to suggest that's true.
No, fine. I'm afraid not.
Okay, well, there you go, guys. So we can still mentally pretend like it's changed everything and our bodies are back to normal. And,
yeah, if you feel good, go with it.
Yeah, crack on. And then finally, our third and final myth of this month. Does a baby having green poo, that's poo, not pool, mean that they're ill? That would, you'd see a green poo and you probably would think that looks a bit
wrong. You'd be quite alarmed seeing a green poo in a nappy.
Yeah.
Well, no, it doesn't usually mean they're ill. If your baby's well and they've done a green poo, it's usually nothing to worry about. So it can happen with breastfeeding and with formula feeding. So formula actually does give a bit of a green tint to your poo quite often.
Okay.
As long as the baby's happy, you know, weeing and pooing and not got a temperature, then that's absolutely fine.
Let the green poos continue.
Yes, and with with breast milk, it's just so the early part of the milk is quite thin, and if they have too much of that, so they have lots of short feeds, then you can end up with a bit of green poo, but that should just go away once you start getting some big feeds.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Tristan.
My pleasure.
As always, you've just smashed all the myths so quickly for us and infilled us with so much useful info.
This thing came from outer space.
The Mothership. On Radio Refurb, 97.2 FM.
If you're liking the show so far, you can always get in touch with me via my Facebook page, which is Mothership Radio Reverb. You can also get in touch via the Radio Reverb website. You can just drop me a line and say, yo. You can also listen to all my old content on Mixcloud. Under my previous alias, which is The Glitter Bosher, I have all of my Mothership shows uploaded and any previous content I might have done. So I'd love you to go and check it out and have a listen. So up for you now, I have the lovely Adele. Adele, you work for the local NHS on perinatal mental health. Is that right?
Yes.
Cool. Tell us a little bit about what your role entails.
So I'm a clinical psychologist, which means I deliver talking therapies for women with a range of mental health problems, from depression and anxiety during pregnancy and post-birth through to more severe mental health problems such as psychosis.
This month's episode, we're focusing all on that kind of first month or 6 weeks or so straight after giving birth. It is a pretty challenging time, isn't it?
It's hugely challenging. It's a massive period of transition in a woman's life, physically, emotionally, hormonally, relationally, with your partner as well.
Yeah. I mean, thinking back straight to after the birth, when I gave birth myself, I had 9 months of carrying this little thing around, and then I went through the whole ordeal of childbirth, and then I was past this little munchkin. And, you know, for so many women, they can go through quite an array of emotions, can't they? If you fall in love straight away, then that's perfect. But you know, there must be some women that do feel a sense of ambivalence or even maybe feeling a bit underwhelmed. Is that something that is quite normal?
Absolutely. And in my experience, ambivalence for all women is normal. I mean, it depends on so many different factors. If you've had a very traumatic birth, for example, or if the birth hasn't gone how you hoped. Also, just the massive shock of transitioning from being sometimes working full-time, independently earning your own money, to suddenly being at home with this completely dependent infant that's very, very needy and very demanding of your time and doesn't really give you a lot of time for yourself. I think those ambivalent feelings are extremely normal.
Good. It's good to hear that, because I won't lie, you know, however much people warned me of how hard it is and the lack of sleep, I don't think I was really prepared for quite how challenging, you know, it is. And, you know, there's the age-old cliche that nothing can prepare you. And you kind of think, yeah, whatever. I can do sleepless nights. But, you know, it does great on you night after night after night after night.
Oh, my God. The sleep deprivation is appalling.
I can remember
just sobbing and Googling at the same time at about 2 a.m. with my first one. I think it's very hard for women to speak up and say that, because as a society, it's, well, you have a baby, so you should be happy now. But actually, I do have this baby and I do love them desperately, but I'm also really tired and I smell and all the other things that come with those first few
weeks. It's just a whole overhaul of your life.
Exactly.
In every way, shape and form, isn't it?
So why wouldn't you have mixed feelings? It would actually be very unusual if you were just kind of in La La Land, really, in a 50s dress floating around.
And just loving every second of being cried at and not being able to sleep.
Exactly.
And being in agony breastfeeding and all those sorts of things. Is there a normal amount of, or an average amount of sleep that women are getting? Like, what should our listeners be expecting when they have a newborn?
I think the problem is there are really no expectations, and there's no evidence that you can go from, because every mother and baby is unique and every baby is unique and has their own temperaments and their own needs and their own moods, just as we do. And you're also trying to get to know each other first time. So, you know, it's two new people in a new relationship. And you know how well that can go, especially when you're thrown together 24/7.
From memory, I think I had to be feeding him about every 2 hours or so, you know, and that was 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
So, and if babies don't go back to sleep, it's a form of torture, isn't it? It really it feels
and if
like
they
that.
Have physical problems with feeding, my little boy had tongue tie, or if
oh,
they have
bless
any
him.
Kind of croup or anything like that, that's going to affect sleeping and eating as well. So.
Yeah.
You know, there's temperament, there's the physical act of feeding, any physical problems with that. Not to mention the fact that you're both learning a new skill, if you're breastfeeding, for example, or bottle feeding for that matter. It all plays into the mix.
It's a whole new world.
So
what advice would you give to our listeners for those first few weeks and kind of surviving them, really?
I think that I think it comes down to two things. One, you really have to look after your basic needs as much as you can for eating, sleeping, trying to maintain some normality. I think women kind of go into a bit of a superhero mode, trying to do everything, keep the house clean, let a lot of that go, have very low expectations for yourself in the first 6 weeks, apart from making sure that you eat and sleep as much as you can, keep you going. And then the other thing is to be really, really kind to yourself, really self-compassionate, because women get very self-critical after birth, have lots of guilty thoughts. I'm not doing this right. I'm not good enough for this baby. I can't meet their needs. And actually, it's just a learning process.
Yeah.
And it's a process you have to go through. So trying to be more self-compassionate, remembering this is a really hard job that you're learning for the first time. You wouldn't expect to play the piano straight away.
Absolutely.
You'd allow yourself to practice and make mistakes, and that's okay.
It's nice to hear that advice. Before I had my little one, I was sure that I would just take it in my stride, but there were still things that I felt that maybe I would be judged on because I wasn't doing them right, or mm-hmm. you know, if I had to add a little bit of formula because I didn't feel like he was feeding enough, then mm-hmm. there was a level of guilt with that. And there is this overriding sense of I'm not as perfect as I want to be with this child, which, and I would consider that I'd had kind of a relatively easy first,
mm-hmm.
well, I say easy in the loosest form. I haven't had it as bad as some women, let's put it that way. But there's still that sense of guilt, which kind of stuck with me. I touched upon earlier about having an initial connection with your baby when it's first born. When should ladies have really developed a bond with their baby in that early stage?
I probably wouldn't say there are any shoulds, because each mother and baby is unique. But if you're really struggling to bond to your baby, to maybe feel that you're meeting their emotional needs, maybe you're caring for them practically very well, but it doesn't feel like there's an emotional connection there, maybe a month to 3-6 months after the birth, that might be a time to start thinking about, you know, getting some extra help, talking it through with your midwife or your health visitor initially.
Right. You know, I was really lucky that I had, you know, a great partner on board to help me, especially the first few weeks he was off work, so we really tackled it together.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, there's a point where the partner, if you've got a partner, if you're lucky enough to be in that situation, they might go back to work, and then feelings of resentment might creep up.
Yeah, I'm just nodding a lot. Totally agree.
But, you know, I guess is that something that you think does play quite a big part in the
most protective factors for women becoming or not becoming unwell after birth is a good supportive partner. But it is a huge period of upheaval for your relationship. You've got to renegotiate your roles. You can't just focus on each other anymore. You've got this person who wants all of your attention from both of you all the time.
Mm.
And then there is the resentment that creeps in because one of you gets to go out and escape and the other one doesn't.
Yeah.
So I think it's very normal, and it's about trying to find some time for you as a couple within that to still try and keep a sense of you as a couple.
And I guess communication with them.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, would you say that also reaching out to your parents or mm-hmm. your friends or anyone to help you get through kind of mentally?
Absolutely. So again, you know, partners are really important, but a really good support network is really important as well. So do go to your local Sure Start Centre, attend the baby drop-ins, you know, sessions, meet other mums, because that will really normalise how you're feeling as well.
Mm.
If you've done the National Childbirth Trust NCT groups before
that's
really good, because then you've got a group of women who are at the same stage as you, who are going through the same. But however it is that you can build a support network, do it. Family, friends, mothers at the same stage as you. And definitely use the local Sure Start centres or children's centres.
Fab, that's really useful to know. So I guess, you know, some mums might not have had any sort of a history of depression, but then they might experience some forms of that after giving birth.
Yeah.
Are there any telltale signs that a woman should look out for to suggest that she may be experiencing this?
So the statistics suggest that about 10 to 15 per 100 women will experience some kind of depression or anxiety post-birth.
Right.
Every woman goes through the baby blues 4 days after birth, which is when there's a lot of hormonal changes. But if you're looking at something that's more prolonged than that, so kind of a month, 3 months after birth, if you're experiencing lots of tearfulness, lots of anxiety, feelings that you can't cope, if your sleep is poor, if your appetite's poor, or you can't get any pleasure out of things, then those are some of the signs that might be more concerning.
Right.
And also postnatal depression can happen a number of years after birth as well.
Can it really?
Yeah, for some women. So, you know, don't kind of put a time limit on it either.
Right, yeah.
It's important to remember that it could still be something that's affecting you. Say if you've had a traumatic birth and you were just coping with that first year and then it kind of hits you a year later, maybe.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah, again, being kind to yourself, recognising that might still be a factor in seeking help when you do need it.
And I guess maybe it's not necessarily under the label of postnatal depression, but actually just a kind of sense of loss at losing your old life.
Absolutely.
Which may not be in this period that we're talking about, but even, you know, a year later or 2 years, thinking, oh gosh, you know, I used to
be able to do what I wanted when I wanted, or have this high-flying career, which is no longer.
Absolutely. And I think loss for women now, because we're not in the home pre-birth often, is massively underestimated. I mean, you know, the loss of your independence, the loss of your career, or restriction of your career aspirations, maybe.
Yeah.
Not being able to go out whenever you want to, particularly if you're breastfeeding.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really think that that is completely underrecognised.
I think, yeah, I mean, I've always been quite a busy, active person, and so having to slow down dramatically, it's taken a bit of getting used to.
When you think of is how important it is to try and preserve some aspects of your old identity post-birth. So even if it's, say, I don't know, say if you love swimming and you go swimming for an hour once a week, just to have something, even if it's very small in the early stages, just to keep you going and remind you of who you were, and a bit of continuity is really important.
Yeah, well, me trying to do this radio show with my little one, as I was saying earlier, it's been quite challenging. I've had moments where I've had him strapped to me when he was about 6 weeks old and, yeah, trying to do interviews and he's like gurgling in the background. But I just thought that this is a perfect channel with which to record my journey, I guess, and share it with our listeners. So for those who might have been struggling, especially with the kind of more severe stages of postnatal depression, where can they specifically seek help?
I think there's been a huge culture of women suffering in silence, feeling able that they can come forward. Particular concerns around, you know, it's not okay for me to say that I'm not happy, particularly with my baby, in society, because there is quite an idealisation of motherhood in society. And also there can sometimes be fears of, will my baby be taken away if I say I'm struggling? So those are the kind of fears that can play in. And they're very normal and understandable, but they shouldn't stop women seeking help. So talk to your midwife, talk to your health visitor, talk to your GP, can make appropriate onward referrals. There's lots of medications you can take that are very safe during pregnancy and breastfeeding, if that's what you choose. Personally, for me, I think talking therapies are very important.
Okay, tell us a bit about that.
So, for example, you have the primary care psychological therapy services.
Okay.
And they can deliver a range of things, from whether you want to learn new skills just to manage mood and anxiety. So maybe you just need to know, when I'm feeling very panicky or overwhelmed, how can I calm myself, how can I soothe myself, through to maybe counselling if it's brought up some issues from your own childhood, which isn't uncommon because you're becoming a parent, or if you've had an experience of birth trauma that you need to work through. So if you Google primary care psychological therapy in your area, it should come up. They often accept self-referral, and women who are pregnant should be prioritised to be seen within 4 weeks.
Guys, I'm going to put all the info of where you can access any support on my Mothership Facebook page, so get them and kind of whack them there for you. This has all been really useful, Adele. Thank you so much. I mean, my little one is a few months old now, and, you know, I can personally reiterate, it does get easier, and like those first 6 weeks or so, for me, really challenging, you know, didn't sleep, really painful breastfeeding. He needed to feed loads because I didn't really have much milk, I think. When I got to about 6 or 7 weeks, I did find that something changed in him anyway, and he relaxed a bit. I could put him down for 5 minutes and go and make a cup of tea. I didn't have to carry him every single second. But I guess, you know, again, because it is your when it's the first child, you don't know, have a benchmark with which to measure stuff against. So you just think, gosh, this is all I know. This is what it's always going to be. But, yeah.
And my little boy is 3.5. And I can say there are different challenges at every stage, but it definitely gets easier.
That's so good to know.
You know, every week, every few months, he'll change. There'll be new challenges, but it does get easier.
Thanks so much, Adele.
Thank you very much.
I'm here in a bar with a lovely lady. What's your name?
I'm Sam.
Hi, Sam. What's the one thing that you wish you knew for that first month, 6 weeks of having a child?
I wish I'd known that I shouldn't be embarrassed about breastfeeding out in public. I used to rush home because I used to feel that I shouldn't do it when out. But actually, once I did, I realised that it's absolutely fine. And I wish I'd known that from the beginning.
So did you, you had to kind of plan your life around going home and feeding?
Yeah. I used to basically just, as soon as I felt that she would be wanting a feed, I'd make excuses and head on home.
Oh, bless you. But now you just whop a boob out at any opportunity.
Yep, that's it, yep.
Thanks for that, Sam. Radio Reverb. You're listening to The Mothership with Josie Booth.
Here I am with the lovely crew that we interviewed a couple of months ago. We were chatting all about before we gave birth. I'm now with them a couple of months down the line. So we've got the lovely...
Holly.
Who else we've got in the house?
Sarah.
And Chloe.
Everyone's cracking up at their introductions there. This is going to go smoothly. Right, ladies, so tell us a little bit about your birth. Holly, you were first. How did yours go?
It was unexpected to start with because it was 2 days early it started. But it was, in hindsight, it was like doves delivered him at the time. I'm not going to say because of any expectant mothers out there. But it was amazing, really. It's an incredible experience. It really hurt a lot more than I thought it would, and I was unprepared. But it's quite an empowering, incredible thing. I was in the bath for about 7 hours and then...
Didn't you get like pizza delivered at one point?
Yeah, we were in the birth centre and we had pizza delivered and had like cans of Sprite and stuff. I only had one slice of pizza because I was a little bit busy. but Ronnie managed to eat the rest of it, so that was great. But it was a really wonderful experience. Again, in hindsight, at the time, probably not so much.
You had no pain relief, so
Just gas and air. I was high on life. They had to take the gas and air off me after a while because I was forgetting to push and instead was just listening to the sound of helicopters. It went as well as it could have. So
did anyone else have gas and air and have that experience? Sarah?
Helicopters. It was literally my best friend. I'd gone on a TENS machine for the most of it. And then once I got into labour ward, I had gas and air and I literally was like, it's fine. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to get through this. And then it really ramped up and I was like, maybe gas and air isn't going to cut it. But I did just stick with the gas and air in the end.
But you actually, you went over and you had to be induced, didn't you? Yeah. So was that kind of, you kind of thought that might happen, didn't you?
Yeah, so they always say sometimes you follow your mum or you follow yourself, and I was 2 weeks overdue. So I went the full 2 weeks and I was in a pretty bad dark place by the end of it. Went in to be induced and they say if you're a first time mum, induction can take 24 hours to kick in. However, I think I was kind of ready to go. And so it literally started within hours and that was 12:30 and he came at 2:30 that morning. And actually I was quite lucky at how short that labour was compared to like the other girls, so
actually it was kind of a short but maybe more intense, possibly
much more intense. Like my contractions were like 6 in 10, they don't really like to go over 4 in 10. Yeah. So I meant I couldn't go to the birth centre, but do you know what, in that moment I just did not care. Yeah. I was like, just get this baby out of me. Yeah. So in the end I think I was kind of fortunate, a long wait but a short labour.
There's no planning that can go into it, like you have no idea what's going to happen, do you?
Exactly. And each baby, you know, our next babies will be completely different again.
That's
so
it. And similarly to how we actually all conceived, it was all quite different and we actually did all have pretty much, yeah, we ticked every box in terms of all our different, yeah, styles of birth.
It's a good sign that we're saying next babies.
So yeah, a few months down the line we're already discussing cracking on to the next ones. So Chloe, tell us about yours.
So mine was very unexpected as well. Jake came 5 days early.
We can hear him, you might hear him in the background crying there.
Yeah, so, and unlike Sarah's, my contractions were very slow coming, so 1 minute I might have 3 in 10, and then I wouldn't have a contraction for 20 minutes. So my labour ended up taking 34 hours. And the day I gave birth also coincided with the day that we were moving house. I was also having a home birth. So I delivered at 7 o'clock in the morning at home and then our removal people turned up at 8 o'clock in the morning. So you definitely can't plan these things. I used hypnobirthing techniques and that worked for me.
That was strong. And also you had quite a remarkable instance of your baby being born in the amniotic sac, which I read somewhere is like 1 in 80,000 or something.
Yep. So my waters didn't ever break, yeah, with Jake, and we didn't realise until I delivered Tim, yeah, and they had to pull the amniotic sac up.
Quite remarkable. I have seen images of that. It's strange.
The thing is, I said to Owen the whole time, you are not going down that end. I don't want any photos or videos or anything. But then when they told me that, I actually thought it was quite unusual and wanted him to film it. He refused because we have one photo very early on. But yeah, he refused, which is actually quite sad. Aww. In hindsight, I would have actually shown all of you because it's such an unusual thing.
Yeah, definitely.
But it might have scarred you for life. You might never have been able to look at your child in the same way. Just always seeing it in that sack.
I don't know. You feel different about these things when you're going through it, yeah, to what you perceive it to be before.
Yeah,
I really do think.
Yeah, totally. So tell me about having, I know Chloe spoke about this, and like actually not having an instant connection. Not that you didn't love the baby, but actually when you looked at it initially, it was a bit like, okay.
When I looked at Jake, so Jake, I think, again, because of the long birth, he had a really elongated head, and I looked at this purple alien, is what I thought, and this the midwife handed him to me, and I was just like, what do I do with it? I had... No, not that I didn't have any love for him, but I just had no connection with him at all for a day or two, really. And the more time I spent with him, the more I loved him. It wasn't that I didn't not love him. It was just, it wasn't a person. It was a thing.
Yeah. And I felt quite similar, I think. You know, when I was first handed Phoenix, he was just this little tiny mouse, and he was very, very cute. But it was just like, he was a separate thing. What about you, Sarah?
And that literally, I just remember him being placed on my chest, and I the first thing I just thought was like, I've done it. So I think it just took a little while for me to realise he was actually here, if you know what I mean.
That's I was more
consumed with myself and how I was feeling. That sounds probably a bit selfish, but just the fact that I just gone through it.
Through labour, I think you're allowed to be a bit selfish.
Like. Exactly, and I was just relieved it was over, to be honest.
Cool. And what about you, Hoss?
Well, to be honest, I was so high when he came out that I don't even remember, because I didn't know the sex of my baby, and I don't remember. I've got this weird memory of being like, Ronnie being like, it's a boy, and being the happiest he could be, but I just don't really remember those moments. I remember him being stuck on my chest and his mouth was open. He was instantly trying to find my boob, which has not changed 5 months later. And I honestly don't know. I can't even remember that. I think I was just utterly overwhelmed and astounded that what had just happened had happened. And just,
I think that's the surreal thing, is that you've just delivered birth to life, and then the midwife gives it to you, and you don't
just deliver the placenta.
But you don't even know how to look after that child. And I tried to breastfeed it, and it was like, I've just delivered this baby, and I can't at the moment even feed it. And I think that was quite daunting to be like, I'm in charge of this, and I think that's probably contributed to the not like the bonding thing, because you're more conscious about, I need to keep it. I need to work out all these other things.
Yeah. I mean, we went and got a midwife to show us how to put a nappy on, because the stump was there, and we were like, it's the stump, and it sounds so stupid now, but is the stump out? Is the stump in? I was just like, you know, it was just worth checking. And like the first few days, well, we rang the midwife hundreds of times, so.
Yeah. So briefly tell me about your recovery, guys. Like, no, Chloe, you didn't actually have stitches, did you? So did you find that actually you felt quite quickly you recovered down there?
Yeah, so I was quite lucky. I feel the day after, I didn't physically feel like I'd had a baby. Yeah. And so I was quite lucky.
I knew about the uterus contracting back down when you breastfed. So actually a week later, like, tummy had...
painful.
It was painful, and that was something I wasn't prepared for. But actually, a week later, you know, your tummy's half gone down, and you're like, wow, that's pretty impressive.
Just a bit saggy.
A bit saggy and a bit wobbly and jellyfied. But yeah, what about you, Skills?
Yeah, I mean, I had stitches, but actually... it was just sitting down. Holly lent me her donut cushion for the week, which is very nice.
Classic.
Friends.
But to be honest, you know, it's so funny. Now we're this far away from it, it feels like a blip. Do you know what I mean? It does feel like a blip, whereas it was a week and a half.
Yeah. At the time, I was like, oh my God, I can't walk. And every time I went to the toilet, I thought my insides had actually left my body. And I did think, this cannot be right. But apparently it was okay. And, you know, a week of sitting on a donut pillow, and I was like 90% there. 2 weeks later, I felt like, oh, did I have a child? And then I think 5 weeks later, I was playing netball. So
just goes to show. So anyone that's listening that's about to have their baby, it does really fly by.
In summary, all of us are really positive.
Yeah.
And all of us have no bad words to say about anything.
This is a perfect positive to kind of link us into your feelings of the first 6 weeks. Because for me, they weren't very positive. It was bloody hard. It was harder than I could have ever imagined. I remember the sleepless nights, every couple of hours having to breastfeed. And it was agony. And I was having to put my child screaming on my nipple. Holly, I remember you telling me about how you were coating your nipples in Lanisol. And then I was a couple of weeks after you. And it was like, oh my God, you weren't wrong. It was really challenging. Did you find the same holes? Or you actually had quite a little munchkin, didn't you?
Well, my Reggie was a lovely baby. And that was great. He's a good sleeper and stuff. But my breasts, my God, when my milk came in, I could have fed the 5,000 with that milk. I had to change my bed sheets every morning for a week. My mattress was sodden. You know, I was in such agony. Even though I was feeding and Reggie was taking milk, my breasts were so engorged and I was in such agony that I just couldn't handle it. Yeah. I couldn't handle how much, yeah, how full they were, and it was just, I always say to Ronnie, but it's like tying an elastic band around the bottom of your balls and just imagine how that feels, because that's how it felt. Someone had tied elastic bands around the base of my boobs and all the pressure that built up was just insane. I didn't think I could do it.
But you did, yeah.
And that, luckily that was the only... Well, now I love feeding. Now I'm like, oh my God, I don't ever want to stop this, but I will.
but is that kind of, for you, that's your kind of core memory of that first month or 6 weeks, is kind of the feeding?
That was a big part of it, because I found it so difficult, But I just loved him being there. I don't know. He was I miss those newborn days now when I just want to watch some TV and have a cup of tea. Yeah. Like, he just slept so much and I didn't really have a crying baby. So nice. He just slept on me, and I just never wanted him to be leaving me. So, and he didn't. Like, the first 6 weeks, he probably just slept on my chest the whole time, and I didn't have to do anything. I live at home with my mum, and my mum just washed up after me, washed my clothes, did everything. I know, I'm a privileged.
There's no eyes of daggers going at Holly now.
didn't have my privacy and stuff like that. Yeah, he swings and roundabouts, but it was lovely to have that where I didn't lift a finger, which is nice. But as I say, nicer to have your own property and stuff. It depends.
Chloe, what about you? What kind of springs to mind when you think about the first 6 weeks?
So the first 2 weeks, Jake was how I imagined a baby to be. And then from weeks two till about 2 weeks ago, it was just non-stop crying. And I honestly was not prepared for the amount of crying. Yeah. It was 9 hours a day from the second he woke up to the second he went to sleep, and he didn't even sleep. It was crying throughout the night. So it's just very different.
Challenging.
Very challenging. I just really was not prepared for colic, reflux, whatever you call it. But
we're coming out of that period now. Cross fingers, everyone's got fingers crossed for Chloe. And what about you, Skez?
Well, the first week, I'd say, was great. You know, sleepless nights because he'd all have to sleep on our chest, but you kind of expected that.
I liked that.
Yeah, and it was fine. It was brilliant. And obviously, you girls know at length about this, I had many breastfeeding problems. So that kind of took a nosedive when I went to a breastfeeding cafe, which I cannot recommend enough. And they said he was tongue-tied. And from then, it kind of spiralled out of control. He wouldn't latch on, had to use nipple shields. Eventually weaned him off that. And then what the real sort of killer was, I got mastitis. Yeah. So anyone out there thinking of breastfeeding, just please look up mastitis and know what to do if you think you might have it. Because I think I was a bit sort of uneducated about it. And that then turned into an abscess. I ended up in hospital, having it drained. And it just kind of, at that time, obviously put a big dampener on my whole breastfeeding experience. But happy to say, totally come out the other side. Yeah. You should see the size of my child, a very chunky boy. and he's thriving. We love it. It's pain-free. It's easy. So just if it is hard at first, just please stick with it if you want to. Because it does get better.
It really does, doesn't it? And I think the challenge is with your first child, that first period, you've got nothing to compare it to. So when I had a screaming baby and he wasn't sleeping and it was all really hard, it's like, is this what it's always going to be like? Because if it is, I'm not going to be able to cope. But actually, now I know what he can be like when he's chilled.
Is that normal for a baby to cry that much?
And things
it
are
is
temporary.
Actually normal.
Things are temporary. I always fooled myself and say, oh my God, this is it, how am I going to cope? But things are temporary and they do change and do get better.
Well, and also, they then start smiling and laughing, and then it's just like, oh my God.
You actually fall in love all over again.
There's nothing matters. Nothing this child can do can upset me, because he's just so perfect when he smiles and laughs, and that's obviously what
makes
meant
it all better.
Do.
Yeah. So tell me something you've all, briefly, something you've all learnt since giving birth. For example, I'll give you, so mine would probably be, A, don't judge anyone, because, a lot of things that I'd always predicted I would never do, I was like, no, I don't want to do formula, or I don't want to give baby a dummy. Actually, these are things that I've ended up resorting to, and totally respect any mum's decision for anything that they need to do to get them through. But
also,
what about you guys?
It's not the mum's decision. Sometimes the child makes that decision for you. So for me, Jake decided he did not want the boob anymore, and I had to bottle feed him. So that wasn't my decision. So sometimes it's out of your hands, it's into the baby. The baby will do what the baby wants to do, and you just have to roll with that.
With it. Any other kind of...
I think what I was saying before, I'm a terrible catastrophizer of things. When he wasn't feeding well and I couldn't get out of the house because I spent all day feeding, I was like, oh my God, this is the end. How can I live like this? Obviously, it doesn't happen like that. Things are constantly changing. The baby's constantly changing. He wouldn't nap anywhere else but on me. Now he naps in his sleepy head all day. So just kind of be positive that things will get better, because I really thought at the beginning, this is the way it's going to be. And obviously, nothing has stayed like that.
Yeah.
So be positive.
And I suppose life is baby-led. You might think that you are going to get somewhere at 12 o'clock. You're not, because they're going to poo, they're going to throw up, they're going to need to change their outfit, and then they'll do that again. And just like, that is just life. You will do what your baby tells you to do. And it's still 5 months later, that's basically life.
My other big thing is just do not worry about routines. So my mum constantly said, you need to do a routine, you need to do this. But again, when the baby's ready for a routine, it will happen. Yeah. Don't feel pressurised into bad habits, because, as Sarah said, the bad habits, the baby takes themselves out those bad habits when they're ready to. And just don't put pressure on yourself, because it will all happen when it's meant to happen.
And don't take anything for granted, because 5 months in, I just want him to sleep sometimes and he doesn't. And like, it's just like, just enjoy every second. Don't try and get them in their own beds. Don't try and do anything. Just enjoy them sleeping on you and doing everything, because they won't do it forever. Yeah. And I just, it's just going too fast.
It's flying by. So actually, you know, the first 6 weeks are really challenging, but actually they're really precious and they're so tiny, and you won't get it again. It's such a cliche, but all those cliches are born out of truth, aren't they? So just a bit of a random one. What nicknames did you have for your little ones
before they were born?
No, like what, since they came out, what do you call them? Like what do you and Ronnie call little Reggie?
Reggie Roo. And like, we call him, because he's Scottish, it's Wee Man sometimes.
Wee Man.
Yeah, I think that's Chloe, it.
Chloe,
really.
Didn't you do one about
Jake
him?
Groggins, because he was just always crying.
That's funny, mine's Grandpa Stiltskin, so they're going to look the same.
What else did we call him? Grogmonster the General. He used to be Woody Woodpecker, because when he was feeding, he would literally bang into me, like, bang the boob. I can't remember what else. Jacosaurus Rex.
That's a good one. I like that. It scares me.
So I haven't actually used this for a while, but I used to call him my little pork chop, because, as you've all seen, he's rather large. And he's just a little fat baby. So, yeah, pork chop seemed to fit him quite well.
Lovely. And finally, this might be kind of touched upon what we did before, but any final bit of advice for our listeners, for anybody who's about to give birth? Just like, you know, something you just didn't know about, or just...
It's a lot better than everyone makes it out to be. Yeah. Just enjoy it.
And you can do it. Like, when I was shouting, I can't do this, there must be another way, you can do it, and you will do it.
And you know what, that second the baby's out, you're just back in the room again. You completely forget what's just happened, but that's, you know, you're in a different zone when you're pushing the baby out, but as soon as he's out, bang, back in the room, and you've done it, and that's it.
After all the pain and stuff, I genuinely think the angels delivered him. I think white doves flew into a room, dropped him on my lap. But that's basically how Reggie came into the world, and
we'll do it again. Yeah, I think that kind of speaks volumes.
I can't wait to do it again. Like, I actually can't. I look forward to giving birth again, which I can't believe I said though.
I agree with Holly.
Sick, twisted ladies. Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
The Mothership on Radio Reverb.
Hi, my name's Carla, and the one thing I wish I knew about having a newborn is you are literally making it up as you go along.
Basically, there is no set rule for anyone. Every child is different, right?
Yeah, and there is just no answer to anything. You can muddle through and just think, am I doing it right? If it feels right, you probably are. That's it.
No judgment. Don't go on Google and try and get answers from other people. Just do what feels right for you and your baby.
Exactly. But it's all a lie. You are just making it up.
Well, that's a great bit of advice for our listeners. Thanks, Carla.
We have sadly come to the end of our show of The Mothership. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Thanks to everyone that participated on this month's show and shared their information and advice and stories. But you get through it and come out the other side. Tune in next month for our breastfeeding special on Radio Reverb. Adios.